And we move to the fourth case, I think. Mm-hmm. Fourth case this morning, U.S. versus Mathis.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Hans Kesser. I am the attorney for the defendant, Franklin Mathis. Now, obviously, this is a somewhat of a difficult case today because I discovered Harris, United States versus Harris and Apprendi, after I had filed the brief. Okay. So the premise of the brief is actually the main argument is wrong. Guilty plea cases, obviously, there's two issues. Question is whether the plea is valid and also whether or not there was any issue at sentencing. Now, the defendant obviously was concerned about sentencing, and I dealt with that in my brief in the footnotes. But the plea struck me as being somewhat unusual in the way it was taken. And it did appear that both Mathis and his attorney were somewhat confused. The indictment charged a Section 841B1A violation, a conspiracy which carried a sentence of 10 to life. Mr. Mathis filed the statement to enter a blind plea to the charge, and again indicated that it was his understanding he was facing 10 to life. And then he acknowledges in that document that he understands that that's what he'll be facing. Then on the day of the plea hearing, the assistant U.S. attorney advises the court and the defendant that, well, the penalties will be different. The prosecutor indicates that under the new information, the penalties would be less. It would be 5 to 40 years, fine of up to $2 million, supervised release of 4 years to life, $100 special assessment. That is the penalties under Section 841B1B. However, the assistant U.S. attorney then indicated at sentencing that the government still intended to prove this higher amount, that is the penalties for Section 841B1A, that would be at least 5 kilograms of cocaine or 280 grams of crack cocaine, and makes a statement then during the plea colloquy, while the upper ends of the penalty will remain 40 years, the minimum could actually rise to 10 years. That the minimum could actually rise to 10 years. I guess the confusion that came about for me is that if they're allowed to come into the sentencing hearing and prove, after the defendant's plea, to prove a higher amount, then it would seem reasonable that then the higher penalty should also apply. Now, obviously, Elaine addresses that issue, Elaine and Harris, and what they basically say together is that if the prosecutor wishes to seek the higher penalty, then that has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury. But since the lower penalty is already within the range under Harris, then that's something that the judge can find. Now, okay, so that argument seemed, the primary argument that I made seems to be precluded by Harris in this case. And, of course, counsel did attempt to rectify that situation and, in fact, filed motions requesting that it be converted to an Anders brief. However, those were denied, so here we are today. And I guess the question is, at least under Rule 34 here, it talks about Rule 34 oral argument. It should be allowed in every case unless the court finds that the appeal is frivolous or the dispositive issue has been authoritatively decided, or that it can be decided on the briefs without oral argument. So I guess I have to presume that the court must have found that there's something here by ordering oral argument. Now, obviously, this court is bound by Harris and Apprendi.
I just want you to know it doesn't necessarily mean that. It could be just because it's set for oral argument. It didn't go before this panel.
Okay.
Yeah, the decision as to whether to vacate the oral argument did not go to this panel.
Okay.
Okay. So I just want you to know I don't think you should read anything into it.
Okay. So obviously the better argument here would have been if that the state was required to prove to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt or that the defendant would have to admit the facts necessary. They would have to prove the lower amount, too. However, that obviously this court's bound by Harris and Apprendi. And so I think the only remaining issue in this case that might arguably remain would be whether or not there was any inadequacy in the plea colloquy. Now, the trial court did, if we look at how the plea colloquy was taken, Rule 11 requires that the district court must and shall do certain things, advise of the maximum penalties, mandatory minimum penalties. And then the case law, as cited in my brief, talks about how the court should, in many cases, walk the defendant through the different penalties that apply for the different offenses and make sure that the defendant understands that. And if you look in the brief that I filed on pages 13, 14, and then 17 and 18, the case law clearly does require the district court to do that, and I don't believe that the district court did do that here. And in terms of the defendant's understanding of the charge, or at least the penalties, there was heavy reliance upon the statement of the U.S. attorney. So arguably, I guess that perhaps it would have been better here if the district court would have walked Mathis through the different penalty ranges that might apply, different maximums and minimums for the different offenses, should have discussed potential guideline ranges that may have applied at the time of sentencing. But none of that was done. And if you look at some of the submissions by both Mathis and his attorney, it appeared that both of them were suffering under serious delusions as to what guidelines Mathis would be facing and what he might be facing at sentencing. So I guess I would ask the court to at least review the case on the basis of the Rule 11 colloquy. Thank you.
Counsel?
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Gordon Giampietro. I'm an assistant United States attorney in Milwaukee. I think Mr. Kester has conceded essentially that the one issue he raised on appeal is without merit in light of his review of Apprendi and Harris. There's no error in this record, plain or otherwise. At the plea colloquy, Mr. Mathis was properly advised that based on the drug quantity at sentencing, he'd receive no more than 40 years, and perhaps under Harris, a mandatory minimum of 10. He received a 12-year sentence. So unless there are any questions, I'm prepared to rest on the government's brief and ask that the court affirm the judgment below. Thank you very much.
Thank you to both counsel. Thanks for identifying your problem. So.